Hello again and welcome to What the Fook. This is a new podcast we've started with former Tigers and Rangers closer Steve Foucault, the most interesting retired pitching coach in the world. Hello, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jim. And if you really don't believe Jim, call my telephone sometime and find out who is the most interesting retired pitching coach in the world.
Yes, I have done that, and it's right there on the voice message. So that number again is BR549 there for everybody to see. So, Mr. Foucault, you have taken an unusual route to the major leagues because you originally grew up and signed as a position player, right?
That is correct. I never pitched a game. I did pitch when I was a little kid, up to the age of about 10. And after that, I was a third baseman, catcher, shortstop, center fielder, and did all those things as a lot of young kids did.
Now, and you've told me before that you, after a point, were not considered the best player on your teams. Is that also right?
That is correct. I played with many a really good young baseball player, and I was probably in the top two or three on each team, but I was not always the best player on my team, though. No.
And this was in Florida, right?
Yes, and I grew up in Miami back in the 60s and the 50s. When life was good.
I understand. Do I also remember correctly that it was an injury that led you to taking the mound?
Yeah, I hurt my knee probably when I was in junior high school the first time. And then after I signed my first spring training as a professional, I hurt my knee pretty good. It's a long story, but it ended me to the mound because I could not hit very well. Because I was actually a pretty good hitter in the minor leagues, and this injury made me bat the way I was not supposed to, an open front side, and I was not a very large person at that time, so they decided to try to let me pitch.
And the rest, as they say, is history. You started out striking guys out right away, even as inexperienced on the mound as you were.
I did. The first time I got to pitch, the manager goes, "Well, we'll get you in one of those blowout games either way and see how you do." I said, "Okay." So he actually got me in the game that night, and it was 3-2 in the bottom of the seventh inning when I came in.
Some blowout.
I struck out. Yeah, it was a blowout. And I struck out like four guys in the two innings that I pitched, and we ended up losing 3-2.
How a career is born. And yet the knee never really got better, but your pitching did?
Yeah, the knee really didn't affect me a lot as a pitcher. It just affected me as a hitter. And actually, the next night, he got me in another blowout game that was 2-1. And it was against Buddy Bell's team in Sumter, South Carolina. And I got to pitch the bottom of the eighth, the bottom of the ninth, and the game was tied. And I pitched the bottom of the tenth, and we won the game 3-2, and I struck out like seven guys in three innings.
Did you have any idea at that point, was word of this getting back to the front office or anything about, hey, we've kind of stumbled onto something here?
Well, they were kind of the ones that had the idea initially. They told the manager to tell me that it was obvious that I was not going to be able to hit like I did, and they knew that I had a really good arm, and they asked the manager to ask me if I'd be interested in pitching. And if not, that I was going to be going back to Miami. So that was a pretty easy decision on my part.
Would you like to be a pitcher, or would you like to be released? I think, which way is the mound?
There's probably a few guys around that would have wanted to be released, probably.
And as you progressed fairly rapidly through the Rangers system, you had probably a nearly unique experience of pitching in two All-Star games in different leagues, different classifications, in the same season, in AA and AAA, right?
That was actually it was in the Carolina League, which is the High A League.
Okay.
And AAA in the same season. Yeah, that was in 1972. Yeah.
So did you skip AA then?
For the most part, I actually did. I think it was 1970, the first year that I pitched. They sent me to AA at the. When RC's was over, I was there like, I think, 10 days and got to pitch twice. And think I had like 2 1/3 innings or something. And other than that, I you know, I didn't spend any time at Double A, no.
But so you pitched in the Single A All-Star game, and then circumstances got you to Triple A for a short time, and you ended up in the Triple A All-Star game too in 72?
Yeah, I pitched in the All-Star game of the Carolina League, and right after that game, the farm director and some people were there, and I was being promoted to Triple A after that All-Star game. So I pitched two innings of that game, and I think I pitched the eighth and the ninth inning. The game was tied, and there was a lot of good players on that. I remember the one guy that got the only hit that I gave up was Dave Parker.
Whoa.
He hit a fastball. He hit it off the end of the, not the end of the bat, but swung so late it went down the third baseline. He got a double. But that was the only hit that I gave up. And then after the game, my wife and I drove my 1970 Camaro out to Colorado in Denver. When I was there, they hadn't played their All-Star game yet. And Jim Marshall was the manager of the Cubs at that time in the league. And I pitched against his team like four or five times out of the six games we played. I was only there for like 10 days. And his starting pitcher that was going to start the All-Star game actually got called to the big league, so he needed a pitcher. And I pitched so well that he asked my manager, Del Wilbur, about me. And it ended up that he picked me to take that guy's place. So I was sitting in the bullpen in Triple A All-Star game. I think we were in Indianapolis. And I was down there about the sixth inning. Del walked down and said, "Hey, he wants you to get loose since you're going in next inning." I said, "Oh, boy, really?" So I pitched two innings of that game. And I struck out like four guys. And at the end of the game, after the game, the clubhouse, Del walked up. He goes, "You know what, Fookie?" He goes, "Dude, this meant quite a run for you." He goes, "You know what? You actually finished in second place in MVP voting in this game. There was so little action. I think the game was 3-2, and there was like seven hits on each team combined had seven hits."
Wow.
And they gave the MVP to Rene Latchman, actually won the MVP. I think he had one hit, drove in a run or something.
Might have been the peak of his career.
Yeah, it could have been.
So you then finished 72 in AAA, right?
Yeah, I pitched like 6 weeks in Denver that year. Yeah, I didn't get called up there until it was, gosh, sometime right around the July 1st or somewhere in that area.
I see plenty of games, being a Giants fan, watching them play at Coors Field, and you see those astronomical ERAs, and they put balls in the humidor and all that stuff, and there never seems to really be a good answer about how to pitch in Denver and survive. So, you know, one of the things we want to do in this series is ask these kind of questions, like, what the fook? How do you pitch in Denver? What did you do? Did you do anything differently then?
I really did not. When I was called up, Del called me in his office, of course, and said, he goes, "The mistake a lot of people make is when they get moved up that they think they need to do different things because the players are better." He goes, you don't need to do anything different. Just do what you've been doing. And he said, "You'll be successful. And if you try to do things differently, you probably will not be." So I tried, you know, the only thing I did was try to throw to the bottom of the strike zone and move the ball in and out, mostly in on right-handers and mostly away on left-handers. Because I threw a hard sinker and I threw a hard breaking ball, so just kind of did that, and things turned out pretty well. I actually pitched very well in Triple A. I think I was 3-2 and had eight or nine saves or something, and I think I had a low ERA. It might have been in the twos. I really don't remember because I don't look at my baseball card backside very often.
As a matter of fact, in 72, you were 10-2 with a 165 in 48 games. 19 saves, 82 innings pitched, and struck out 94. So, yeah. Now, you were primarily at that point, I understand, fastball pitcher?
Yeah, pretty much threw probably 90% fastballs. I threw two seam sinker fastballs, right-handers, and four seamers and left-handers for the most part, and tried to throw mostly sidearm to right-handers and three-quarters to left-handers. The ball did different things. Today I can hide the ball longer to left-handers when you throw over the top.
Was that natural movement for you? Did you have to work on on getting the run on the fastball, or were the grips enough with your natural motion to get to you the movement you wanted?
It did. You know, a lot of my fastballs, the left-handers were a little higher in the strike zone, unless I wanted to throw a sinker, of course. But mostly they were, you know, fastballs up to left-handers for the most part, up and away or down and away. And sometimes if I did try to throw it up and in, it was obviously a four-seam fastball all the time.
And so you finished 72 in AAA. 73 is Whitey Herzog at the major league level, right?
Yes, he was hired in the offseason, yeah.
He was hired. That was his first year, his really only complete year there. So you make the team out of spring training. You're there the full season, pitching 32 games, 55 hits and strikeout 54 hits in 55 innings. Your thoughts on your rookie year?
Well, it would have been a little longer, but me and Jackie Moore had a collision in the outfield in the middle of the summer. Broke my collarbone, which is why my numbers were limited the first year, or I would have probably had probably twice that amount of innings and all that other stuff. But yeah, it was interesting learning situation. And it was kind of funny. I was watching the MLB the other day. They were talking about Dick Allen having his retired number 15 in Philadelphia, and he was actually the first guy that I pitched to in the big leagues in my rookie season.
When he was with the White Sox?
He was with the White Sox, correct.
And did you get him out?
I did. I broke his bat, and he popped up to second with two guys on.
Nice, nice, nice.
Of course, the bat weighed about 100 ounces, as they tell us. So.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Apparently, he used like a 40-plus ounce bat. That thing would – it's a good thing it didn't hit you.
Yeah, most guys, you know, back then, they couldn't even carry that to the home plate. These days, they can all do that and twirl it like a baton.
Yeah. Pretty satisfied with how things went your rookie year, learning a lot as you went along?
Yeah, it was. We had a lot of really very young players for the most part. And, you know, Whitey's job was to kind of groom the young players and make them get experience and get used to the big leagues.
Which you did, and so did a number of other people.
Absolutely, we did.
But they still didn't stick with what Whitey and you thought was the plan, and they fired Herzog and hired Billy Martin.
They did. They fired Whitey. There was probably, I don't know, 20 games left, maybe 30 in the season, which is too bad because Whitey was a good guy, and obviously the way his career turned out, it turned out to be a blessing to him, and figured out what happened to the Rangers.
Do you think he was a good guy to pitch for, do you think?
You know, at that time, I didn't know much about it, so I really did. You know, he seemed to be, he was easy to play for. I know that, and he had a bunch of great coaches who had all had many years of experience in the major leagues. As back then, almost all coaches were 10-year major league players and plus. Didn't make them good coaches, but they were experienced, and they could really tell you what it took to be a major league player.
Yeah, and you said, you've told me also that a lot of times in those years, you learned as much from your teammates about how to pitch and be successful in the big leagues as you would have from, say, a pitching coach or somebody else. Is that right?
Yeah, most pitching coaches back then were, you know, they weren't into intricacies of the game as they are today. And, you know, they were pretty much there to coordinate everything, and I don't even think they much communicated with their manager, to be honest. Okay. They all sat at different ends of the benches, if I remember right.
Okay.
And they just kind of watched the game, and after the games they would talk to you and stuff. You know, there wasn't a lot of in-game talking like you see these days, you know.
Right.
Pitch coaches these days, they're out to the mound every 30 seconds, it seems like, to talk to their pitchers, and they're between innings, they have meetings with their pitchers and catchers, and it's, you know, it's like a lot of tutoring going on during the games.
Is that a kind of a sign of the times, do you think? I mean, I get the distinct feeling you're more of the school that says experience is the best teacher and you'll figure it out as you go along.
Pretty much. Even when I coached, that's, you know, I didn't have much to say to the pitchers between the innings. You know, I would take notes and I would talk to them a lot the next day, because a lot of times, you know, they're into what they're doing and they don't need to be distracted because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of distractions during the game.
You have a whole new regime to deal with in 74, but that's the first really successful season the Rangers had, the one that kind of turned the corner for that franchise, maybe saved it even by some accounts.
I would say that's correct.
You have all of the Rangers saves in 74, you have a 2.24 ERA, and you pitch 144 innings, more than two innings an appearance for a so-called short man.
Yeah, I was short. I was only 5'11 3/4" time. So.
Yeah, that's a different kind of short. But, I mean, that's two-plus innings per appearance, and you would never see that today.
No, well, they're not trained to pitch like that. They probably could, and it would probably be a lot better for them physically. And it's just the way you train. And like I said, you know, my first two appearances in the minor leagues were back-to-back, and it was 2 and 3 innings. So, you know, we were used to doing that. We were getting up and down all the time, and our arms were in good shape. These guys throw more before a game now than they must throw 100 pitches before every game. The pitchers get on the sidelines there, and they get up and down and throw their pitches to each other, and they throw for 10, 15, 20 minutes, play long toss, but they don't get the pitch of the games.
It's a whole new era, and you were by far the Rangers' most successful reliever. And tell us about what Fergie Jenkins said about your effectiveness as a reliever in 74, which was the year he won 25 games, oh, by the way.
Yeah, he was pretty good, actually. I think he had like 28 complete games or something. And, you know, there's guys that pitched 15 years in the big leagues, and now they're starters and don't have 28 complete games in a whole career. And he had pitched 8 complete games every year.
Yeah.
I pitched, obviously, a lot in 74. And Billy Martin had me coming games when we were winning 6-4, 6-2 even. And he'd have me coming the game in the seventh inning to finish the game because everybody else was having such a hard time getting people out finishing games. That's why, you know, I had 12 saves, which is not, you know, by today's standards, that's nothing. But I actually finished a whole lot of other games that we won and didn't get a save because we were ahead by 3 or 4 or 5 runs when I came in. Fergie Jenkins walked up to me one day, goes, you know, he goes, as much as you're pitching and good as you pitch, he goes, you should collect all the paychecks in the bullpen and put them in your pocket. Because he says, nobody else is getting to pitch any out there except you.
Well, yeah. 12 saves, but 53 games finished. So that speaks to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And only 123 hits in those 144 innings. So as the season goes along like that and you've been used so much, do you have to keep an eye on how much you're throwing, or do you have to realize, do you hit the dog days of August and say, man, I got to watch this if I'm going to make it to all the way to the end?
Well, back then you didn't think about that. You just, you know, you're pitching to stay in the league, and you pretty much did what they said. You know, whatever they wanted you to do is what you would do.
By the way, did you ever have a multi-year contract?
At that time, I did not. I was making, I think, like $16,000 that year and pitched 140. There's a lot of starters these days that don't pitch that much. And that's in 162 games, not 60 games.
Right. But the idea also is, you know, that was the incentive back then, is you're on a one-year deal, so every appearance counts, and you don't ever beg off a chance to go in and pitch, no matter how much you've pitched in the last days, weeks, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that was your job. You know, you pitched when your arm was sore. I remember, you know, there's times that you get tired, and you know when you're tired, but you still pitched. I mean, you know, after the game, you sit there in your locker and your arm is so tired, it doesn't hurt a lot. It's just tired. And you can sit there and look at it, and you can see your heartbeat in the muscle of your arm. Your arm is so tired. But you can still pitch.
Right.
You can't throw 95 miles an hour no more, but, you know, it sure is a good sinker.
Yeah, as long as you're getting them out.
Yeah.
After 74 season, were you in line for a massive raise after that performance?
Oh, yeah. I had a massive raise. I had I actually had Mike Hargrove's agent at the time, which was International Management Group, and they got me a 2-year contract for a whopping, it was like, you see, 32 and 43,000. So what's that, 75?
Sure.
So I got 2 years for 75, and then I'm sure it was all guaranteed if I remember right.
Good thing.
Well, there wasn't no guarantees back then, actually, but because if you got released, you didn't get paid the rest of your contract. I know that.
Well, you weren't in any danger there. I mean, 75, you go 8-4 with a 412, 59 games, a little less, 10 less games, and 107 innings. Any difference as far as you felt like you were being used in 75 or how you felt physically then?
Well, you know, 75 was a lot different team. We didn't have as much success as a unit, and we actually they let some other guys pitch and try to get some people out. So yeah, it was a good experience. You know, I did pitch a lot that year too, but it was a different team, and they had gotten rid of some people, and it was a different scenario. Billy Mark got fired, and Frank Lucchese took over, and it was, you know, a different way of doing things at that point.
Okay, and then 76, you're 8-8 in 46 games with a 333, 70 down to 75 innings compared to 107 and 75 and 144 in 74. Were you okay physically then?
Yeah, there was nothing wrong with me then. Yeah, it was just part of the deal. You know, I wasn't going in the sixth inning anymore. Well, I was going in like the eighth inning, you know, or I was going into a tie game in the ninth inning or something, you know.
Yeah.
So which was good.
So you were becoming the modern closer at that point.
Well, closer to what you would say, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then comes 77, and spring of 77, you get traded to the Tigers for Willie Horton. And you go 7-7 for Detroit with a 315. I know you've said you enjoyed your time in Detroit, 77 and 78. You particularly enjoyed John Hiller, who was not upset that you were coming in essentially for the same job he already had.
Yeah, John had done that for a long time. Me and John got along really well. He was he never did say any, you know, there's got to, down inside, he was probably not real thrilled, but he knew it wasn't my fault, and I guess his pitching had slipped over the last couple of years, and he was kind of entrenched in Detroit, and everybody loved him, and he was a great guy, and he and I would talk all the time in the bullpen, and we enjoyed each other's company. I think, if I remember, his wife actually lived in Duluth, Minnesota, which is the town that I was born in. I didn't spend much time there, but so we had a little connection there, and we would really, you know, have good conversations. He was quite a fella.
Despite the small size of that ballpark, were you okay with pitching in Detroit generally?
Yeah, I enjoyed Detroit. You just had to, it's kind of like pitching in old Yankee Stadium. You had to watch where you threw the ball.
You don't want them hitting it down the lines? Is that the idea?
Yeah, you don't want them hitting down the right field line. You want them to hit the ball to center field.
Yeah, let go.
Ron LaFleur was playing outfield, and okay. Mickey Stanley played outfield still, and Steve Kemp was playing outfield some, and had the old Young Tigers, who were really bad when I was there. They turned out to be pretty dang good at some point, but when I was there, they were just all rookies, and Trammell and Whitaker and Jason Thompson and Walking Fuss and Lance Parrish. There was a lot of good young players, but they were like AAA players at that time, learning how to play in the big leagues. We were pretty bad.
Break even in 77, 78, you go 2-4 with the Tigers, and then all of a sudden you become a Kansas City Royal. What's up with that?
It's the old, after 6 years, you become a free agent, and that's what happened. They weren't going to pay anybody in Detroit because they didn't have any money, or so they say. So that's how I ended up in Kansas. It's not funny. It's kind of a crazy story. When you get put on waivers and somebody picks, if two teams pick you up and you're claiming you off waivers, you go to the team that has the worst record.
Right.
So I was put on waivers, evidently, and two teams picked me up, the Brewers and the Royals. And I guess the Brewers must have had a better record than the Royals at the time, so I went to the Royals. And the connection there was Doug was the manager at that time of the Royals, and he knew me and knew that I was pitching well, and so he picked me up.
But it was three games, and then you were done there, got released, didn't even make the postseason roster because they kept Steve Busby instead.
And
that essentially was it for the big league career.
Pretty much. Whitey called me and he goes, "Well, Fugie, he goes, I got some bad news that we've got the playoffs made, and Steve Busby's been a part of this organization for quite a long time and a big part of it, and he's coming off surgery and he's going to be ready to pitch, so we owe it to him to put him on the roster, and you're the last guy here, so you're the first one to go." I said, "Well, that's great." So I just went home.
You know, they want you bad enough to claim you, and then after three appearances, see you later.
Yep, pretty much.
That'll make somebody the most interesting pitching coach eventually. But you tried a little bit in AAA with Houston. You got a kind of an invite there in 79?
Well, actually, I got invited to the Seattle's camp. I went to Seattle's camp in 79 out in Arizona. In Arizona, they invited a lot of older pitchers to their camp because I guess they were having a tough time. They were actually just kind of starting out, and they were going to redo everything, and so they released everybody. I was there, and Paul Lindblad, Dick Pohl, I think Tom House was there, and they released everybody on the same day, I think.
Wow.
So one of my friends was with the Astros, and he was like a player coach kind of in AAA. He called me and said, "Hey, why don't you come over here to our camp in Cocoa Beach?" And so I went there, and because Houston was going to use Joe Zambito as their closer.
Right.
And he had never done that before, and it was his first year in the big leagues. And I guess they thought it would be a good idea to have me around for an emergency case in case Joe couldn't do it or something. And I guess Joe got off to a good start for the first month. And after a month in AAA, became a liability, and so I went back to Arlington where I lived.
I was just talking to Larry Durker the other day about what it's like when you get to the end like that and guys you used to get out are hitting you. I mean, did you look at your pitching and have a moment like that that said, "You know what, I think I'm done with this"?
No, that really wasn't. I mean, I still wasn't pitching that bad. My arm was kind of not doing so well on my shoulder, and it was hard to throw every day. And I said, "You know what, my agents, they said I could give me a job in Japan, and I wouldn't go to Japan. I had a hard enough time speaking English. I don't know what I would do with that language." So I just went back to Arlington and hung out for a while. Actually, that year I played in my first old-timers game, and I was 29 years old. And the crazy thing is, there was a couple of guys younger than I was that was playing in the old-timers game.
I
wasn't the youngest one. And, yeah, Joe Lovito was actually one of them. He was only 28, I think.
That's tough to be. It's one thing to be done. It's another thing to be thought of as old. But after 9-10 years of that, I suppose you, in big league terms, you are kind of old.
Yeah, well, back then, you know, you pitched a lot, you know, and it's not like today. They monitor everything you do today. You can't even go to the bathroom without them writing it down.
Stretching it out and getting their money back.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
But they didn't have that much money invested in you to begin with.
They had like $2,200.
Wow.
And I had to hang around for 90 days to get $2,000. I got $200, actually.
The big money.
Yeah, there was no big money. They say that the only place to make money is in the big leagues, but back then you didn't make money in the big leagues.
Yeah.
My friends were carpenters and plumbers, and they made twice as much as I did.
So you were in for the love of the game.
Yep, perhaps that's all. You know, I did that since I was 7 years old.
Looking back, regrets on how it turned out or how you went about it?
No, not at all. I just, you know, the only thing that you could hope for is that you'd have known like what they know today, you know, all this technology and stuff they have and the way to take care of yourself and what to do and what to look for and all that stuff health-wise, you know?
Sure.
But, you know, that's the way the game has progressed over the years. It's happened to a lot of other guys.
It would have been nice if you could have had a softer landing, let's say.
Yeah, or got like 10 years in the big leagues and, yeah, made a couple $1 million. That would have been nice, but, you know, it is what it is, and you got to be happy for what you got. I tell you what, it beat going to work for a living. I know that.
good approach.
Thanks for listening to the first edition of What the Fook. We'll talk more with Steve about his career after baseball, how he got back into the game as a pitching coach in minor league and independent ball, and we'll get his thoughts from time to time on various aspects of pitching in today's game. Through all of that, I'm sure you'll learn even more What the Fook.